no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome to the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me today for another 60 minutes of old-time radio. We'll start off this time with The Whistler, his story from March 27th, 1949, titled Death of Mr. Penny. After that, it's Suspense and 6 Feet Under, their story from April 13th, 1950.
The Signal Oil Program. Yes, the Signal Oil Program. The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler, rated tops in popularity for a longer period of time than any other West Coast program in radio history. And Signal Gasoline is tops, too, tops in quality. It takes extra quality, you know, to give you extra mileage. And Signal is the famous Go Farther gasoline. So look for the Signal circle sign in yellow and black that identifies independently operated Signal stations from Canada to Mexico. And now the Whistler's strange story. Death of Mr. Penny.
On the icy slope, high above Clear Valley Ski Lodge, the two people, racing down together side by side, appeared like two moving specks of black against a sea of white. To the little man who had his field glasses carefully trained upon them, the picture was far more complete. He saw a very handsome couple, the woman fresh, radiant, and wholesome, the man tall, athletic. And as they swung to a stop at the end of the ski slope, their happiness with each other seemed very apparent. Yes, Mr. and Mrs. Frederick Eklund seemed perfectly matched. The little man with the field glasses could not help but marvel at the strange course of true love. How it could so neatly bridge the gap between the fact of Mrs. Eklund's almost fabulous wealth and the modest means of Mr. Eklund, the mere ski instructor. And the little man had to admit that the two were getting along famously.
Oh, darling, you're wonderful.
Your favorite ski instructor?
My favorite ski instructor.
Oh. Well, then you'll accept my criticisms a little more graciously, Mrs. E. At last, Christie was bad. Fine way to turn an ankle.
And be carried home by the tall, bronzed instructor. I think I'll do it.
I think you won't. We're heading back to the lodge right now.
All right, darling, whatever you say. But, I've still got that headache.
Barbara.
Yes?
Something on your mind? You were so quiet up there on the slope just before we came down.
Quiet? Just taking time to tell myself I'm not in a dream. That we're really together. Married. And so happy.
Are you sure that's all?
I'm sure that's all. And the headache can either be cured or made worse by a dry martini. Shall we go take the gamble?
Oh, you don't have to suggest that twice.
I wonder if you'll always be such an agreeable man.
Yeah, as long as I'm thirsty. Let's go.
An agreeable man. Yes, Fred, you've been that with Barbara, haven't you? That and more. And you know that she appreciates it, that you've made her very happy. But you also know that there is something disturbing her this afternoon. Something more than a simple headache. You worry about it yourself. Bring it up again as the two of you sit by the roaring fire of the lodge and look out at the landscape through a giant picture window.
You, still don't feel any better, dear?
No. I'm afraid I'm going to have to go upstairs, nap for a couple of hours before dinner. Mind?
You know I don't.
What will you do to amuse yourself?
Oh, look at the scenery.
Well, it's not novel enough. You know it too well.
Oh, no. I see something different every time I look out the window. Here. Here, I'll prove it. Did you ever see anything like that?
I don't see what... Yeah. You mean that little man on the terrace?
Uh-huh. The one with the field glasses. Looks like an African explorer. Now, you can't say I see anything like that every day.
No, but I didn't mean people. Frederick, if you don't mind, I'm going upstairs right now.
Oh, but you haven't finished
I'm sorry, darling. I don't want my drink.
Oh. Well, I'll go up with you, dear.
No, please. Frederick, you could do something for me. That new book I want. The manager said they have it in the village now.
Oh, I'll drive right down. I'll get it for you, dear. Glad to. But are you sure you're all right?
Oh, I will be. Just give me an hour. I'll be bright as a new penny. Bright as a dollar. By dinner time.
Sounds worth waiting for. Go ahead, darling.
Thanks, darling.
You watch Barbara turn away, go to the stairs. A moment later, you get up, start outside as if to get the car. But at the end of the terrace, you stop and wait a moment. He goes right inside, doesn't he, Fred? The funny little man that Barbara didn't want to look at. You walk back and see him hurry up the stairs after her. 10 minutes later, he's back down, heading toward the cocktail lounge. You walk in casually and slide into the booth beside him.
Well, Mr. Penny,
it's going very well.
You got it?
I did. 5,000, as usual.
I was a little worried this afternoon. Thought Barbara might have guessed something.
About you?
Mm-hmm. But I was wrong.
Of course. Oh, Barbara threatened me today. She said that this must be the last payment. She's convinced that you'd be quite understanding about those letters.
Oh. I'll have to take a different tack.
Yes, or spoil the act. Oh, they're really nothing, you know, the letters. She just feels that you'd be very hurt if you ever knew there'd been another man in her life once, a married man.
I hurt.
You know, Freddie, you are the odd one. Long as I've known you, I always marvel. What is it that keeps you from simply presenting your case to these women, demanding all the money you want?
Obviously, my dear Penny, you'll never know women. There are things that cannot be told. One of the things is that love alone is not sufficient to hold their man.
You're right, I suppose. Well, I've always left that part of it to you.
Yeah, and let's keep it that way, huh? I'll take care of the romancing. You stick with the business end of the deal. If you don't mind, I'll take my half of the money now.
To be sure, Freddie. To be sure.
As you conclude your present business with Mr. Penny, he excuses himself and hurries away. A moment later, you're conscious of the voice, the song that comes from the lodge dining hall.
Monday, maybe Monday.
Susan, maybe a delightful girl, isn't she, Fred? Talented and beautiful.
Sure.
Yes, and since you met her a month ago, she's been quite overwhelmed by your charm.
Maybe
you stroll across the lobby and stand there at the entrance of the dining hall and watch her as she sings.
He'll build a little home.
She's beautiful, isn't she?
Oh, Penny, I thought you were leaving.
I'm going in to have dinner.
Now, look, Penny, Barbara will be coming down soon. She isn't pleasant to be with when you're around.
Your wife is resting, Freddy. She won't be down for some time.
But,
shh, I want to listen.
And so all else above, I'm waiting for the man
Wonderful. Oh, Susan sings beautifully, does she not, Freddie, my boy?
Mm-hmm. She's quite a girl. Quite a girl.
Yes. Another one of your many side interests. You've always had them, haven't you? Frankie, my boy, let us go out on the terrace for a moment. I want to talk to you. Come along.
The idea, we've already talked everything out.
No, not quite, my boy. After you.
All right, what's on your mind, Penny?
Susan, I want to speak to you about Susan.
Oh?
You're quite interested in her, aren't you?
Oh, I don't know. Just for laughs, maybe.
Oh, I see. Then you won't mind if I ask you to stay away from her.
To stay away? You're asking me... Wait a minute, Penny. You don't mean that you...
You find it amusing, my boy.
Why, she wouldn't even look at you.
But, Freddy, she has many times, so often that I don't want you to see her anymore.
Oh, just like that, huh? Just what'll you do if I ignore your advice, lover boy?
Oh, I could make things rather unpleasant for you. Really, I could.
Really? Like what?
Oh, tell your wife that you're my business partner. That we're blackmailing her together.
You know what I'd do?
No, what would you do, Freddy?
I'd tell her you forced me into it a trick. I was only playing along with you until I saw my chance to turn you over to the police. Barbara's very much in love with me, Penny. She'd believe it.
Yes, yes, I suppose she would. Well, in that case, I should have to tell her about the Carson widow. The incident at Sun Valley 2 years ago.
What?
That the police are interested in finding the man who went skiing with a Carson woman the morning she was killed. Accidentally.
Now, wait a minute, Penny.
I could tell your wife what really happened, Freddy. So be a good boy and stay away from Susan, eh?
With the prologue of Death of Mr. Penny, the Signal Oil Company brings you another strange story by The Whistler. Here in Hollywood, where The Whistler is produced, this is the week when the movie folks decide who's going to win the coveted Oscars. It's too bad there isn't an Oscar for gasoline, because I'm sure that Signal Gasoline would run away with the honors for outstanding performance. Just as some actors become typed in certain roles, you may have typed Signal Gasoline for economy, because of its reputation as the go-farther gasoline. But economy, mind you, is only half of Signal's story. You see, the thing which makes Signal's good mileage possible, the extra efficiency today's Signal gasoline coaxes from your motor, also makes Signal the logical choice for more dramatic performances, calling for instant starting, flashing pickup, or smooth, effortless power. So if you want your car to perform as if it had just won an Oscar, just you keep these 2 points in mind the next time you buy gasoline. One, it takes extra quality to go farther. And two, Signal is the famous go-farther gasoline.
It came as a shock, didn't it, Fred? Mr. Penny's warning. And you wonder if your odd little partner really means to carry out his threat. To make trouble for you if you continue to see Susan. He could make things quite difficult, reviving the Carson incident at this time. It would never do if your wife Barbara found out about that, would it? But in the days that follow, you decide to risk it, to test Mr. Penny's threat. And then one evening at the lodge, as you sit in the cocktail lounge with Barbara...
Fred?
Yes, dear?
Did you happen to run over to Shelville the night before last?
Shelville? Why, no.
Betty mentioned it this afternoon. She and Greg thought they saw you there.
No, no, they were mistaken. Oh, I did go down to the village here. That's the night I ran into Higby, an old friend of mine. You remember, darling, I called you, told you I'd be late getting back.
Yes, I know.
As a matter of fact, Higby and I spent most of the evening at the Buckhorn Cafe talking over old times. See here, Barbara, you don't think I'd lie.
Well, of course not, darling. You know how Betty is, wrong as usual. See if you can get the waiter, will you, dear? I think I'd like another brandy before turning in.
Oh, Freddy, my boy. I could say that this is a pleasant surprise, but it isn't really. I've been expecting you.
Can I come in?
Well, I was about to retire, but...
Thanks. I won't take up too much of your time.
Oh, no hurry. Fix yourself a drink, my boy.
Thanks again.
Oh, none for me. I have my glass of milk, you see.
Well, here's to you, Penny. The winner.
Oh?
She's all yours. Susan, I mean. I'll stay away.
Oh, good, good.
You told Barbara you saw me in Shelville the other night, didn't you?
Did I?
Yeah, it was just a warning, just in case I had any ideas about not playing ball, huh?
Well, I could have told her you were with Susan, but I didn't.
Thanks, thanks. It was big of you.
I thought so. However, Freddie, my boy, if you insist...
I know. I'll stay away from Susan. It's all settled.
Settled? No, not quite. I've been thinking, Freddie, my boy.
What about?
The money we collect from your wife. $5,000 every 3 months. Well, it doesn't seem worthwhile.
Now, wait a minute. I wouldn't push Barbara too hard.
Oh, $2,000 more isn't such a push.
Yeah, but there might be trouble. I wouldn't try. Let's leave it the way it is, huh? $5,000's good enough.
Well, perhaps, but when one has to split it two ways...
I said it's enough.
For you, perhaps, but not for me. Yes, I've been thinking, Freddy. I've been thinking I should dissolve our little partnership.
What?
Yes. I think that from now on, I shall keep all the money.
Wait a minute. I'm the one who gave you Barbara's letters in the first place.
So what?
You think I'll hold still for you cutting me out?
But, my boy, there's nothing you can do about it. Because of Sun Valley, Mrs. Carson...
Why, you...
Oh, please don't get excited.
I ought to wring your scrawny little neck.
But you will not. You will do nothing. Now, please, go. I'm quite tired. Good night, Freddy.
For a moment you stand there, staring at the little man. You watch him as he calmly drops a sleeping capsule into the glass of milk. As he raises it to his lips, he smiles at you. And you know he has you at his mercy, don't you, Fred? You whirl and rush out into the corridor. And as you hurry back to your room, the rage within you mounts with each step. Yes, Mr. Penny has complete control of the situation for the present. But you're not going to let him get away with it, are you? No, the money he gets from your wife means too much to you. And you know that somehow you're going to get rid of Mr. Penny and the threat he holds over you. It isn't until the following afternoon that you know just how you're going to do it. On an errand for Barbara, you stop at the village drugstore, Pop Grandin's place.
That'd be all, Freddy?
Yeah, I guess so, Pop.
Okay. Oh, say, you going back up to the lodge?
Yeah, why?
I wonder if you'd mind dropping off a prescription for me.
Oh, of course not.
You can just drop it off at the desk. Come on back. I'll make it up right away.
You walk with Pop Grandin to the back of the shop. Watch him as he prepares the prescription. Then your eyes wander over the shelves lined with bottles. At the far end of the lower shelf, you see a bottle filled with tiny red capsules, just like the one you saw Mr. Penny drop into the glass of milk last night.
Oh, dreaded the telephone. Excuse me, will you, Freddy?
Hmm? Oh, sure.
I never saw it to feel. Every time I get back here, that doggone...
Couldn't have picked a better time.
As you take the bottle down off the shelf, the idea hits you, doesn't it? Yes, this could be the way, couldn't it, Fred? Quickly, you unscrew the cap, drop a capsule into your pocket, and replace the bottle. Then your eyes skip along the shelf and finally stop on a small bottle filled with white powder marked poison. Deadly poison, Fred.
Sorry to be so long, Freddy. That was Mrs. Ferguson, and you know how she is. Talk. Yeah, now where was I?
The prescription.
Oh, yep. That'll only be a minute, Freddy. Sure nice of you to do this little favor for me.
Not at all, Pop, not at all. It's a pleasure.
You're thankful that Barbara is out when you return to your room at the lodge. Quickly, you empty the contents of the red capsule into the wash basin. Then you fill the capsule with a white powder you took from the shelf at Grandin's drugstore. Moments later, you leave the room, the capsule containing the deadly poison safely tucked away in your pocket. Early that evening, you pay another call on Mr. Penny.
Oh, come in, Freddy, my boy, come in.
Thanks.
I'm going out shortly. You don't mind if I finish shaving, do you?
No, go ahead.
Make yourself at home, my boy. Fix yourself a drink.
Thanks, I'll skip this one.
As you wish. But tell me, to what do I owe the honor of this visit?
Well, I thought maybe you'd reconsider.
What? After the way you double-crossed me with Susan? Not a chance, my boy, not a chance.
I'd take a smaller cut.
And as a matter of fact, I've been seriously thinking of asking your wife for more money.
I told you before, that would be a mistake. She won't pay it.
We shall see.
What are you doing, Freddy?
Hmm? Oh, just looking at this magazine on your nightstand. Holidays, huh? Planning a trip?
Perhaps.
Oh, look, Penny, I need the money. Why can't we make some sort of arrangement?
You're wasting your time, my boy. This is too good a thing for me to share with anyone. I am rather surprised and annoyed, too, that I didn't think of handling the matter this way long ago.
You won't change your mind?
No. After all, you still have Barbara. She's a wealthy woman. Do you begrudge me a few $1,000 now and then?
All right. That's the way you want it.
Yes, that's the way I want it, my boy.
Good night.
Good night. No hard feelings, Freddy.
No.
See you in the morning, then.
Yeah. Maybe you will, Penny. And maybe not.
It's done, isn't it, Fred? There were only 4 capsules in the box. You replaced one with a capsule containing the deadly poison. And now all you can do is wait. And you know it won't be long, for Mr. Penny takes a sleeping capsule every night. You're a little disappointed the following morning at breakfast when you see Mr. Penny sitting at his usual table. It was a little too much to hope for, wasn't it, Fred? That he'd take the poison capsule the first night. But then there are only 3 capsules in the box now. The next morning, you're in for another disappointment. For as you enter the dining hall, you see Mr. Penny again, sitting at the table near the window. He looks up as you and Barbara seat yourself only a few tables away. He smiles, nods, then returns to his morning paper. And then something that Barbara says startles you.
Only 2 left, Frederick.
What?
Only 2 empty tables left. I'm glad we came down to breakfast when we did. I hate to wait.
Oh. Oh, yes.
Oh, goodness, darling. You jumped so. Something wrong?
No. No, of course not. I had my mind on something else.
Yes. You were thinking of the capsules in the box, weren't you, Fred? There are only 2 left now, and it's an even money bet. However, the following morning, when you arrive at the dining hall, Mr. Penny is absent. It's almost 11 o'clock when you and Barbara leave your table, and there's been no sign of him. You're sure he's dead, and you're free at last, aren't you, Fred? Yes. With Mr. Penny out of the way, the Sun Valley incident is closed. It'll be a simple matter with your connections to find someone more trustworthy than Penny to do your blackmailing. As Barbara hurries upstairs for her scarf, the desk clerk calls out to you.
Oh, Mr. Eklund.
Yes? What is it?
A message for you, sir. This envelope.
Oh, thank you.
For a moment, you're puzzled. Stare at the envelope. Then you rip it open. And suddenly, an icy hand closes around your heart as a tiny red capsule tumbles out of the envelope into the palm of your hand. Penny has known all along, hasn't he, Fred? He must have watched you in the mirror when he was shaving. Saw you place the poison capsule in the box. A cold wave of fear sweeps over you as you realize what he'll do now. Your first thought is for you and Barbara to get away. You hurry to your room upstairs, and as you're about to open the door, you hear Barbara's voice.
Well, yes. Yes, whatever you say. What? No, not here. I'll meet you at the point. Inspiration Point, tonight. Yes. 9 o'clock, Mr. Penny.
Mr. Penny isn't wasting any time getting his revenge, is he, Fred? Your first thought is to get away, and then suddenly you realize it's useless to run. He'd find you and Barbara sooner or later. No, you've got to take care of him now, once and for all. And this time, you can't afford to miss. That night, you're standing in the shadows of the fir trees near the point. You see Barbara hurrying up the path. Mr. Penny is not far behind.
Hello, Penny.
What? Oh, it's you, Freddy. What are you doing here?
I could ask you the same thing, but I know what you're doing here. Too bad you'll never keep that appointment with my wife, Penny.
What?
Take a look down there. It's an awful drop, isn't it?
What are you going to do?
You're a smart little operator, Penny. You ought to be able to figure that out.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending to tonight's story. When you passed a signal service station during the past few days, you may have noticed a picture of the happy bluebird on the sign outside. Well, Mr. Bluebird is there to remind you that if you want your motor to sing this spring, you'll be wise to make your next oil change a change to the improved type signal oil that does so much more than just lubricate. Signal Premium Compounded Motor Oil. Well, naturally, Signal Premium has 100% pure paraffin base, the finest lubricant known. But in addition, Signal Premium contains scientific new compounds that protect your motor in ways no regular oil alone can do. For instance, one compound in Signal Premium compounded motor oil actually cleanses your motor of carbon, gum, and varnish. A second compound in Signal Premium protects costly bearings from corrosion. And still other compounds do other important jobs to keep your motor happy as a bluebird. Good reason, I'd say, to make your spring oil change a change to Signal Premium compounded motor oil. Sold only at Signal service stations.
It's all over, isn't it, Fred? Mr. Penny is out of the way at last. The threat he held over you is gone, and now you're free. Back at the village, the Buckhorn Cafe, you spend the next several hours chatting with old friends, and then, shortly after midnight, you return to the lodge, to your room. As you enter, you're surprised to see Barbara pacing up and down.
Oh, Fred, where have you been?
At the village, dear. I told you I
Fred,
had to...
did you hear about it? The accident?
Oh, man who fell off the cliffs, yeah. They were talking about it in the lobby when I came in. Matter of fact, the sheriff is down there now talking to the manager.
The man's name was Penny.
You knew him?
Yes. He was blackmailing me, Fred.
What?
He came to me about a year ago with some letters I'd written. Foolish letters. He wanted $5,000 for each one. I laughed at him. They meant nothing to me, and I threatened to call the police.
You threatened?
Yes, I threatened to. Then Mr. Penny showed me some other letters. A woman's letters. Mrs. Carson.
Mrs. Carson?
Her letters to you, Fred. When you're at Sun Valley. He said the police would be anxious to see them. I couldn't believe you'd done anything wrong. But then when he said send the letters to the Idaho police, I was afraid.
He's been blackmailing you all this time because of those letters to me?
Yes.
Barbara, listen to me. I've got...
It's not true, is it, Fred? The skiing accident. You didn't kill her, did you?
He told you that?
This morning, yes. He called me on the phone, told me he could prove it, that you'd killed him. Made it look like an accident.
That's not true.
Oh. Oh. Then he was lying. Oh, I knew it, darling. I knew it all along. But I agreed to meet him at the point tonight. He said he'd bring all the proof I needed. Letters, documents, all the evidence.
He had all that with him tonight?
Yes. But he never arrived. He fell off the cliffs on the way.
Yeah. Yeah, he fell off the cliffs.
Oh, darling, darling. I'm so glad Mr. Penny was lying. If he'd had any evidence on him, the police certainly would have discovered it when they found his body. Wouldn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they would. I'll go, Barbara. I'm sure it's for me.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Sunday night at this time. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil, and fine quality automotive accessories. Featured in tonight's story were Gerald Moore, Dorothy Lovett, and Jeff Corey. The Whistler was produced by George W. Allen, directed by Gordon T. Hughes, with story by Joel Malone and Adrian Jondeau, and music by Wilbur Hatch. All characters portrayed on the Whistler program are fictional. Any similarity of names or resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Suspense. Autolite and its 96,000 dealers present Mr. Dan Daly in 6 Feet Under, a suspense play produced and edited by William Spear.
Harlow, did you know that in the springtime, a young man's fancy turns to...
the world-famous quality and performance of ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs?
Well...
Autolite, you know, is the world's largest independent manufacturer of automotive electrical equipment. And when you come right down to it, who knows more about the best spark plugs for your car than Autolite ignition engineers? The men who design coils, distributors, and all the other important parts that go to make up the complete automotive electrical system. Why, it's the skill of the same Autolite ignition engineers that made possible the practical development of the Autolite resistor spark plug, the greatest advancement in spark plug design for automotive use in the past 20 years.
Have you no sentiments about spring?
Sure, Hap. Spring into your car tomorrow and see your friendly Autolite spark plug dealer. Have him replace worn-out spark plugs with world-famous ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs. Whether you choose the resistor type or the regular type, you can't buy a better spark plug for your car. Because you're always right with Autolite.
And now, with 6 Feet Under and the performance of Dan Daly, Autolite hopes once again to keep you in suspense.
You'll never know what it's like down there. You're 6 feet under, 10 hours a day without food or water. With that light on your face so the yokels can pay their dimes and stare down at you. It's like being dead, only you know what's going on. The pump that feeds the air down to you seems to be keeping time with your heartbeat. And you can't help thinking that if it ever stops, the heartbeat will stop with it. You get a lot of time to think down there. To think of all the things that can happen. And when the show closes for the night and they dig you up, you head for the nearest bar to forget all the crazy things you've been thinking.
Yeah, what'll it be?
Double whiskey beer chaser.
Hey, you with the carnival?
Yeah.
Must be interesting. What do you do?
Got a sideshow. Fill this up, will you?
Sure. What's your trick, sword swallower?
No, I roll over and play dead.
Oh, you're the guy that's buried alive. Yeah, I saw you this afternoon at the matinee. Took the kids over.
Yeah? What are you raising, a couple of undertakers?
Oh, I didn't take them into your tent. Seemed kind of a morbid thing for kids.
But not for you.
What do you mean?
Skip it. How about hitting this glass again?
Okay. A lot of people see that act of yours. Tent was crowded. I kind of thought it'd be different.
How different?
Paying a dime a head just to look down at you through that glass. It's not a bad racket you got there.
Yeah, big, fat, happy racket. Not tough like standing behind a bar and breathing and eating and moving whenever you want to. Well, if you think it's so hot, dig yourself a hole and pull up a cough and nobody's stopping you.
When you want another drink, call me.
Just leave the bottle. I'm still alive. I can pour my own.
Suit yourself, friend.
They were all the same. They paid a dime to look at you down there. But if they saw you later above the ground, they acted like you were cheating them. Like you owed it to them to stay buried or they weren't getting their money's worth. I used to do another act. A juggling act. An act that took me years of sweat and practice to learn. But nobody came to see that. You had to learn a dog's trick to make a living. You had to trust people. People you wondered about.
Hello, Jack.
Good
luck. Looking for you.
Go on, get lost, Cliff. Don't follow me around.
Miriam sent me out to find you.
She knows where I am 10 hours a day. That's more than most wives know.
If Miriam was my wife, I'd spend a little time with her.
You spend quite a little time with her as it is, Cliff. Quite a little time.
Oh, you're talking through that bottle, Jack. Miriam and I are old friends.
Yeah, I heard about it lots of times. You were a stage door Johnny when she worked in burlesque, weren't you? I used to laugh about you. That was before you came to work for us. But now I don't laugh anymore, Cliff. Now I wonder.
You're drunk.
Am I? What's a guy like you doing around a carnival, Cliff? You were a big shot accountant with a good business. And all of a sudden you chuck everything to learn to be a barker for a pitch like mine. and to dig me out of that hole every night.
I'm not complaining. Why should you?
Because I figure you gotta have a reason, Cliff. I figure that maybe some night you're gonna forget to dig.
Oh, you're being ridiculous, Jack.
Sure. Only you still haven't told me why you joined the show, Cliff.
That's my business.
Well, never mind. I'll tell you. Because you're in love with Miriam and it's killing you to see her married to me.
All right, Jack. That's part of it. Sure, I love Miriam, but that isn't what's killing me. A bad heart is the thing that's killing me.
What do you mean?
I chucked my business and joined the show because I've only got about a year to live. Miriam is the only thing in the world I care about, and I wanted to be near her.
That's a very touching story, pal. What am I supposed to do, break down and cry?
Jack, I'd do anything to see Miriam happy. And if it meant killing you, I could do it without batting an eye, because I've got nothing to lose. I want you to know that.
That's good, Cliff. Now we understand each other. Have a drink.
I don't want one.
Oh, well, this ain't just an ordinary drink, Cliff. This is a toast. To one of us. To the guy who buries the other one. For good. It was a fool thing to do. A mistake. Because he'd play his cards closer now. If I told him to pack up and get out, he might take Miriam with him. And I was crazy about Miriam. Something was wrong between us, but I was still crazy about her. I had to know, I had to wait and find out if he could take her from me. And that meant I had to keep him around. And every day he'd have me helpless down there in that hole like a baby. I didn't want to drink anymore. I went back to the tent and tried to sleep, but I kept having that same dream over and over again. Not a picture dream, but a dream in sound. The sound of that air pump that kept me alive down there. It got slower and slower, and then it stopped. And I woke up choking. I jumped out of bed.
Jack!
Yeah?
Jack, is that you?
Yeah, Miriam. You go back to sleep.
Is something wrong, dear?
Oh, I had a dream, that's all. Go back to sleep.
Oh, well, maybe if I may just...
I don't want any hot milk. I'm going out for a while.
Jack, I hope you're not...
Where would I get it this time of night? I'm not going to drink to save the lecture.
Well, you don't have to snap at me like that. That's all you've been doing lately.
Have I? Well, nobody's died from it so far.
I don't get you at all.
Don't you? Well, maybe you're not trying hard enough. I'm going for a walk.
Jack!
I walked around the grounds. The moon was doing trick things with the shadows around the tents and the pitch signs along the midway. I loved it. A cheap two-bit carnival, but I loved it. When Miriam and I were first married, I used to dream about owning the works someday. Yeah, I was going to do big things. Clean up with the juggling act, then write the Becker brothers and offer to buy them out. The Ferris wheel, the rides, the whole show. I was going to own the world. But instead, I wound up with 6 feet of it. They could dig me up out of that hole every night, but I couldn't dig my dreams up anymore. Finally, I went back to my own tent and slept until showtime. Miriam was gone when I woke up, so I walked over to our pitch. I was going to pull the flap and go in, but then I heard her talking to Cliff. So I listened.
Again last night. I hate it when he's like that. I can't stand it much longer.
You won't have to stand it after tomorrow night. You'll be away from here. Things will be different.
You sure you want to do this for me, Cliff?
I want you to be happy.
He suspects something. I know him. If he finds out...
He won't find out. Not until tomorrow night. And when he does, it'll be too late. He won't be able to do anything about it.
You love your wife and you stand outside a tent and hear her planning to murder you. It wasn't only Cliff. It was her, too. And I knew right then what I had to do. I had to kill them. I had to kill the both of them. And tonight, right away.
Autolite is bringing you Dan Daly in 6 Feet Under, tonight's production in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Say, Hap,
Who knows more about law than a lawyer?
You sure got me this time, Harlow.
Well, then, who knows more about the best spark plug for your car than Autolite Ignition Engineers, the men who designed the complete electrical system for many makes of America's finest cars? They engineer spark plugs just as they engineer coils, distributors, and all other ignition parts to work together as a perfect team.
Go on, Harlow.
Well, it's the skill of the same Autolite Ignition Engineers that made possible the practical development of the Autolite Resistor spark plug, the greatest advancement in spark plug design for automotive use in the past 20 years, and the newest addition to a complete line of transport, aviation, marine, and regular automotive spark plugs engineered by Autolite in sizes and heat ranges for every purpose.
I guess I've learned my lesson.
So, friends, see your friendly Autolite spark plug dealer. Have him replace worn-out spark plugs with world-famous ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs. And whether you choose the resistor type or the regular type, you can't buy a better spark plug for your car, because you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage our star, Dan Daly, in 6 Feet Under, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Now I knew. It wasn't only Cliff, it was Miriam, too. It was like getting hit in the stomach when you didn't expect it. You love your wife and you stand outside a tent and hear her planning to murder you. I walked around the grounds in a daze. I tried to tell myself that I was wrong, but your own ears can't lie to you.
Jack! Oh. Hey, Jack!
Oh, hello, Bonnie.
I've been screaming my head off at you. You hypnotized or something?
Sorry, Bonnie, I was thinking.
Oh, call for Cliff on the phone in the office wagon. You want to take it for him?
All right. Hello?
This is Martin at Transcountry Airlines. I have your reservations confirmed.
Oh, good.
2 seats on the midnight plane to Chicago tomorrow night.
Thanks a lot.
I know you said you'd come in to pick up the tickets this afternoon, but I wanted to call and let you know it was confirmed.
I'm glad you did. You'll never know how glad.
Just part of our service, sir. I'll hold the tickets for you.
No, you've gone to enough trouble. You can cancel the tickets.
But I thought...
I'm changing somebody's mind. Nobody's going to Chicago tomorrow night. Nobody. When you see something coming and you know it's too late to stop it, you get calm. You watch it like it was happening to somebody else. I had to kill them. I had to kill the both of them. Tonight after the show. After they brought me up. I'd have 10 hours down there to think of a way. I went into the tent and watched Cliff getting the hole ready for me. I wanted to laugh.
Is this all right now?
Yeah, that's deep enough. Cliff, okay. I want that speaking tube hooked up today.
What's the matter? Getting lonesome down there? I thought you didn't like to talk to the customers.
Today I feel sociable. I had a glimpse into the bright and cheery future. Hook it up.
You're the boss.
Where's Miriam?
Getting a new roll of tickets from the wagon.
When there's a crowd out there on the midway cliff, Calliope going and the merry-go-round and all, can she hear my buzzer?
Well, why wouldn't she? It's hooked up right from the box to the ticket cage. But you never use it, so what difference does it make?
It could make a big difference if nobody was in the tent and the air shut off on me. A big difference. Let's check it.
All right, there's a button in the box. Press it. Counter's just outside the flap. We can hear it from here. Are you pressing it?
You see me, don't you, Cliff?
I don't hear anything out there.
Neither do I.
It must be a loose wire or something.
No, Cliff. It's the batteries. Because I checked while you were digging and the batteries are gone.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. When we were moving from the last town, my flashlight went dead. I borrowed the buzzer battery.
But you forgot to put them back.
Well, I'm sorry, Jack. It slipped my mind. You never use a buzzer, so I didn't think of it.
You thought of it when we needed the batteries.
Jack, I tell you, it was a mistake. That's all. Look, the midway's opening up. There's no time to start an argument.
Yeah. Yeah, there'll be time for that later, tonight. We can talk it over tonight, Cliff.
That suits me.
Come on. Let's lower the box.
All right. I'll go get a new set of batteries. You might as well climb down, slide into the box. I'll cover you when I get back.
I lit a cigarette. My hands were wet and shaking. Suppose he didn't wait until tomorrow night. Suppose this was it. I couldn't tip my hand by refusing to go down, but I had to make sure I'd come up again, just this once. He'd be gone a couple of minutes, long enough. I ducked out of the tent and across the midway to the pitch of old Anna, the fortune teller.
Oh!
What are you so jumpy about, Annie? You act like you've been seeing ghosts.
I was communing with other world.
Save that for the suckers. I want you to do something for me. I want you to promise, and I don't want you to forget.
Is it evil thing?
No, no, Anna, it isn't evil. When we shut down at night, I want you to come over to the tent, that's all. I want you to hang around there until Cliff digs me up, understand?
Beware of lower world, Jack. Evil things lurk there.
Promise me, Anna.
I promise. But let me read your fortune in the cards. It only takes a minute.
There's no time. Besides, you read them for me on the train the other night. Was there something there you didn't tell me? Are you trying to frighten me with a sucker pitch?
There was evil. The death cards were around you. They were all around you.
Shut up, you old fool. Just come over to the tent tonight. That's all I want from you. That's all. I had to grab a hold of myself. A crazy old woman with a deck of greasy cards. I'd been with tent shows too long to let a thing like that get me. I went back to the tent, got down into the hole, and slid into the box. Cliff lowered the narrow view shaft that the customers looked through. I fastened it to the hole just above my face. Then he started to shovel the dirt in on top of me. I could hear it hitting the box. There isn't another sound like it in the whole world. Then it was all done. Cliff looked down at me through the glass, and the smile on his face made me cold. Then he was gone, and I was alone with the sound of the air pump. In a few minutes, the customers started to come in, and it wasn't so bad. If anything went wrong, they'd be able to hear me through the speaking tube, just as I could hear them.
Oh, come on, Mother. Come on, look at it.
Oh, you look. It gives me the creeping whistle-dizzle.
Well, you're the one who wanted to come in. Come on, it can't hurt you. Look, you can talk to him right through this here hootenanny.
Well, can you hear me down there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Is it... well, are you all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
See, just like I told you, there's nothing to it.
That's all we see for our money?
Sure, the whole darn thing's a jip. Well, so long down there. We'll all join you someday, sooner or later.
Oh, Dad, what a thing to say. I think they'd give you a little more for your money, though.
That's the way it was. Hour after hour, face after face, until all the faces blurred and ran together. Their voices came down with the same questions and the same disappointed wisecracks. But they kept paying and they kept coming. It was getting on to late afternoon because the crowd was beginning to thin out. Everybody would be headed home for dinner by 5:30, and the gang working on the midway would knock off and go to the commissary tent for chow. At 6:30, the crowd would drift back again. The big crowd with the men home from work. And by the time they were gone, old Anna the fortune teller, my insurance policy, would be standing by, and Cliff would have to dig me out whether he wanted to or not. I was glad to see the crowd go for a while. It gave me the next hour alone to think and plan things out. Then it hit me. The next hour alone. I'd forgotten that part of it. I looked up. There were no faces in the viewing glass. I felt around with my hand, and I found a buzzer button in the ticket cage. I pressed it again and again, but Miriam didn't come. Sure. This was it. They were up there now, getting ready to do whatever they were going to do. Then they'd walk away over to the commissary tent. And they'd eat and laugh. Nobody'd suspect them. It'd be an accident. I tried to think of something else. They wouldn't have the nerve to go through with it. And then I knew I was wrong. Because all of a sudden, there was complete silence. Somebody had cut off the air pump. I twisted and turned, and I pushed against the lid of the box like a madman. But it didn't budge. There was more than a ton of earth on top of me. The pressure on my chest increased, and I couldn't breathe. Flashes of red and blue color were whirling around in my head. I looked up, gasping for air. And there was a face staring down at me. A child's face.
See my baby turtle, mister? What are you doing down there, mister?
Kid, get somebody quick. Go outside and get some help. I'm smothering. Don't just stare at me. Call somebody. You hear me? Stop looking at me. Get somebody. He kept staring at me, his eyes wide and frightened. He moved his mouth once, but he was frozen with fear. And all of a sudden, his face was gone. He was gone. I made one last hopeless try at the lid, and then suddenly I didn't care anymore. I relaxed. All the colors in the world exploded in my head. Then they all ran together. There was a roaring sound, and everything went black. I came out of it slowly. The pump was going again. The beat of it keeping time with the throbbing in my head. And they were digging for me. I could hear the sounds of the shovels in the earth. And then finally, against the wooden top of the box.
There we are, and give me a hand. Hey, you all right, Jack?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay now.
All right, I'll boost you. Come on, pull it up there.
It's all right, lay me on. I'm all right.
Jack, come over to my tent and sit down. There is evil
here. I don't want to sit down. Where's Miriam? Where's Cliff?
Somebody went for them to the commissary tent. They will be here soon.
Yeah, soon. But it wouldn't have been soon enough.
Lucky thing I spotted that kid running out of here. He's been sneaking into shows. He saw the air pump motor out and back and turned it off while he was fooling around with it.
You figure that's the way it happened, huh?
Come in. What's the matter here? Jack, what are you on top for? What happened?
Take a guess, Miriam.
There was an accident. Some kid shut off the motor for the air pump.
See, Miriam, that's all it was. Just an accident. Nobody to blame.
Jack, I should have been here.
Yeah, maybe you should have. You could have kept that kid out of the tent. It would have worked out better. Where's Cliff?
Around, I don't know. You could have been killed down there.
That's what I figured, too. I could have been, but I wasn't. Don't worry about it, baby. It won't happen again. It won't happen to me again. It was my game now. I was up walking and breathing. It was my game. I played the tender husband. I wasn't going to show him my cards now. That came later. When she calmed down, I kissed her. Then I went looking for my last answer. The kid who had turned off the motor. There were kids all over the place, all looking the same, the way kids do. But I'd remember his face. You're bound to remember a face when it might have been the last one you'd ever see. Then I spotted him going into the house of fun. I nodded to the ticket taker and went in after him. I caught him in the room with the tilted floors and grabbed him.
Ow, mister! Let me go!
Take it easy, kid. You won't get hurt.
Why'd
you turn that motor off?
I was just fooling with it and it stopped, that's all. I didn't know what it was.
Who told you to turn it off?
Nobody. Let me go.
Stop, kid. Tell me the truth or I'll give you a buck.
I am telling the truth.
Tell me. Tell me who told you. Stop biting me and tell me. I'll let you go when you answer me.
What do you want me to say, mister?
A man told you to turn that motor off, didn't he?
No, no. I mean, yes.
All right,
yes.
Kid. All right. Here's your dollar.
I don't want no dollar. I want to go home.
I went into town and drank until the show closed down, until I was sure they'd all be asleep. Then I went to the first aid wagon and nosed around until I found what I wanted. A can of ether. Cliff was bigger than I, much bigger, and I had to be sure. I soaked a handkerchief in the stuff, and then I let myself into Cliff's tent. He was lying there, quietly. He was sleeping. He wasn't making a sound. I crept over to him and pushed the handkerchief over his mouth and nose. I held it there, held his face right into it. He didn't even murmur. And when I let go, after a while, his head dropped back. He was out. I picked him up and carried him to the pitch tent. I put him down in a box, and then I shoveled the dirt in on top of him. I left the air pump running. I wanted Miriam to see him down there, him instead of me. Then I could stop it waiting up for me when I went back to get her.
Well, it's about time you got back. I've been worried sick about you.
Worried about me, baby? That's silly. I can take care of myself.
That accident this afternoon. I'm still shaky.
Yeah, I can see why you would be.
Jack, there's been something wrong with us. Maybe it's my fault. I want to straighten it out.
Everything will be straightened out all right real soon. Come on. Let's go for a little walk.
But it's after midnight.
I know, but I got a surprise for you. Something I want you to see.
What is it?
Over at the pitch tent. Come on. She came. I had to hand it to her. She She was playing the act of the hilt, just like nothing was wrong. I took her arm and held it tight, good and tight, so she couldn't turn and run. And we went into the pitch tent.
Well, what's the surprise? Kind of dark in here.
There's enough light down in the box. Go ahead. Take a look.
Well, the hole, it's filled in.
Yeah. The show has a new star for a one-night stand. Go ahead. Look.
Jack, what... No. No, no.
Yeah. Yeah, baby. Yeah. How do you like it now? That's the way I was today when that motor cut off.
Get him out. Get him out.
Oh, it's my turn to cut the pump off. Only nobody will be able to fix it this time.
No, don't you crazy.
Sure, I just ripped these wires out and he gets what I almost got.
What are you killing him for? Why?
I knew what you were up to. You'll never take that midnight plane tomorrow. You'll never run away with him now.
I wasn't running away with him. The tickets were for us, you hear me? For you and me.
Well, there you forgot to tell me about it, baby.
I couldn't. Cliff was lending us the money to buy the show. He said it'd be mine anyhow someday. I wanted to do it for you because I loved you. Because I hated what's been happening to you down there.
Why would he want to help me?
Because he loved me, that's why. And he knew you're all I care about. He sent the money for the show to Becker Brothers yesterday, and we were supposed to fly up tomorrow night to sign the papers in Chicago.
You're lying.
No.
Yeah, no. You're lying. No. You're lying or you'd have told me.
Would you believe me? Would you believe anybody? Do something! Do something!
The shovels. The shovels, Miriam. Where are they? Quick. Quick. Help me. Miriam, dig. Dig. Help me. Dig. Dig. And that's it, Sheriff. You'll never know what it's like down there. You have nothing to do but think, and... Well, you get to thinking crazy things. That's why it happened. And when we got to him, he was dead.
I see. Mm-hmm.
If you want to have that typed up as a confession, I'll sign it.
Isn't much good that'd do. That deputy that came in a while ago gave me a copy of the coroner's report. Cause of death, coronary thrombosis, his heart. No strangulation. He was already dead when you stopped that air pump. He was dead even before that, before you gave him the ether.
You mean Jack didn't kill him?
Not according to the coroner. Death from natural causes.
Then you're not going to charge me with murder?
You can't murder a dead man, mister. Just like you can't lock a man up for being a fool.
Oh, Jack.
It's all right, baby. You heard him. They can't do anything to me for being a fool.
Suspense. Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Dan Daly.
Hey, Harlow, here's a poem for you.
All right.
Summer, winter, spring, or fall, Harlow doesn't change at all. Be it day or be it night, Wilcox thinks of Autolite.
Well, you're right there, Hap. Any season is the right season to talk about the more than 400 products made by Autolite for cars, trucks, planes, and boats in 28 plants coast to coast. These include complete electrical systems used as original equipment on many makes of America's finest cars. Spark plugs, batteries, generators, coils, distributors, electric windshield wipers, starting motors, bullseye sealed beam headlights. All engineered to fit together perfectly, work together perfectly, because they're a perfect team. So, friends, don't accept electrical parts supposed to be as good. Ask for and insist on Autolite original factory parts at your neighborhood service station, car dealer, garage, or repair shop. Remember, you're always right with Autolite. Next Thursday for Suspense, our star will be Ray Milland. The play is called Pearls Are a Nuisance, and it is, as we say,
a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Tonight's Suspense play was produced and edited by William Spear and directed by Norman MacDonald. Music for Suspense is composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Bluskin. 6 Feet Under is an original play written for radio by Joel Murcott. Dan Daly will soon be seen with Ann Baxter in the 20th Century Fox Technicolor production, Ticket to Tomahawk.
You can buy world-famous Autolite resistor or regular spark plugs, Autolite stay-full batteries, Autolite electrical parts at your neighborhood Autolite dealers. Switch to Autolite. Good night.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
that's it for this episode of the Relic Radio Show. If you'd like to hear more from The Whistler, more from Suspense, this or any of the other podcasts, just visit relicradio.com. You'll find all that listed right on the front page. We have a search box as well if you're looking for something specific. There's also a link to our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your donations make this all possible. Thanks to those who have donated. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another episode of The Relic Radio Show. The Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.